now playing in Los Angeles. Exquisite food and drink, world-class art everywhere, spectacular sports, and dazzling Hollywood attractions. Yep, I'm talking about L.A. L.A. offers the full variety of a food scene, from game-changing taco trucks to 35 Michelin stars. And do you know that Los Angeles has more museums, theaters than New York? Take that, New York! Get your fix in music, film, comedy, and world-class museums. Wow, L.A. has a chip on its shoulder. Plus, get behind-the-scenes movie magic with a world-famous studio tour, exclamation point. That's something that should be on everybody's bucket list. Start here with discoverla.com. L.A., they say it's better than New York. Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend is sponsored by ADT. Introducing ADT self-setup, featuring everything from motion sensors to Google Nest cams and the Nest doorbell with a battery or wired option. Easily install the ADT self-setup security system at your convenience. This is so good because I can't set up anything.
I know, me neither.
And they've made it simple. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm terrible. I can't get an electric toothbrush to function properly.
Yeah, so easy even Conan O'Brien can do it.
That's what they should say from now on. Yeah. No heavy-duty tools are needed. And if you need help, ADT can provide virtual assistance along the way. Also features Nest cams that can tell the difference between a person, an animal, a vehicle, or with the Nest doorbell, even a package.
That's cool.
That's cool. Plus, when every second counts, you can trust ADT's 24/7 professional monitoring. Go to ADT.com today or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. Google Nest Cam, Nest Doorbell, and Nest Aware are trademarks of Google LLC.
Hi, my name is Elle Fanning. And I feel honored about being Conan O'Brien's, I think, pretty good friend.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends, yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there, welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. That's a legitimate opening to the show.
That's the problem.
That's we do so much bullshit right before, and they're like, okay, everybody stop. And then you're like, hello there. Like,
yeah,
I know we've talked about this before, but it never stops being funny.
Really well, doesn't. You know what? Let's be honest with the listener that seconds before I said, hey there and welcome, we were babbling back and forth. And Sona, you've been using a lot of Armenian words today.
Yes.
Now, the one that you just used just seconds before we started, Matt burped.
Yeah.
And then you said something. What did you say?
I said, Anush.
Anush. What does that mean?
Anush means in Armenian, it's like when someone. Like a especially a baby, because I'm speaking Armenian to my babies.
Mm-hmm.
So when they burp or, you know, fart or something, I go Anush, which means like, I hope that was delicious.
I hope that was delicious.
I hope like whatever made you do that was delicious.
Oh, I see.
Oh,
not that
I
the
see.
Fart
not,
was
no,
delicious.
No. Like I hope like I know that you're belching because you ate something. Like I hope it was good.
Oh,
and
I like that.
That's Anush. Okay,
Anush. I'm going to use that with my daughter.
Yeah. It's nice. And then
the other one is you and I have been friends for a long time.
Yeah.
And when I get comfortable with people, I sometimes when I see them, I grab them by the shoulders and I give them a little pat on the back.
And then you get comfortable. Like 5 minutes after meeting someone, you'll do that.
6 minutes. But anyway, I saw you today, and sometimes you'll strike me, and maybe I'll give you a little pat on the back.
You grab and you shake a lot.
I grab too. And I shake to try and improve people's circulation.
Oh, is that why? You're really dancing the line to make sure people know you're not like abusing people. But you are abusing people. You've abused Blay for a long time.
Well, Blay, for a while, I was trying to teach him to be a, you know, what to do in an attack.
Oh, you were.
So
you're
I would strike him occasionally. And Blay, you were fine with it, weren't you? Okay, we're good. That's all the time we have. So Sona, I was giving you like a little, oh, Sona, and I grabbed you. I was excited to see you, and I gave you a little shake. And you said?
I said, gamats.
Gamats.
And I say that to my boys, who are 10 months old. One of them especially. I say it to Charlie.
One of them especially
rough.
Is 10 months old?
No, one of them especially. I say it more often. Because he's very rough. You know, he's still learning about his body. So I'm like, gamats, whenever he's like petting.
And what does gamats mean?
It means like... slowly, like gently, be gentle.
Chill out.
And I, when you were like shaking me and, you know, being Conan, I said it to you almost instinctively the way I say it to my little baby.
So the relationship you have with your 10-month-old, 10-month-old twins is the same relationship you have with me.
I'm trying to teach him how to be a human being.
Yes, and, this makes sense.
And I say the things to him that I say to you what I say to him when I'm teaching him how to be a functioning human.
What's the, you're teaching, you want them to be, only know Armenian or do you also want them to know English?
I don't want them to know English at all. No, I'm kidding. You of course I want them to.
That's what I was getting to. You want them to be strangers in a strange land their whole lives.
I want them to have little accents.
Now, how does that work? How do you balance it between English and Armenian at home?
Usually we speak to them mostly in Armenian.
Wait, but they need to know English, too.
They'll learn. My first language was Armenian, and I learned English. Did you? Come on.
Did you? Well, you have problems.
What?
Your G's are very hard. Her G's are very
man,
hard.
Hey, man, gamats. Yeah. Okay?
You're right. You know what? That's very soothing when you say gamats.
Gamats.
But
maybe
it doesn't.
That's the new way. Yeah,
it doesn't work. But yeah, I think that like they say if one parent speaks to them only in whatever language, and then the other one speaks to them in English, they can just grow up being bilingual, which is what we're hoping for. So we'll
or
see
speak neither language really properly. Yeah. That's another possibility.
Yeah,
okay. I mean,
Arminglish.
Yeah.
Arminglish. Yeah. That's true. I mean, it's, but gamats. I'm going to say that to you from now on.
I grew up, my parents, who are, you know, super hardcore Irish Catholics, and my life was filled with these phrases and words that I realized later on other people don't use every single day.
What?
Yeah. My mom would say, like, you're being a bold stump.
Oh, yes. I love these.
You know, I told you that. But also, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph was something that was, I heard. That I heard that every 3 seconds.
What is the other one? Jesus,
I don't like that even fooling. Yeah. I don't like that even fooling. I don't like that even fooling.
But why do you speak so much nonsense?
Gibberish?
Yes, much gibberish.
I think it's in the blood. I mean, you know, the Irish love to invent words.
After drinking.
Okay, that's incredible. And again, I'm going to repeat, it's the last ethnic group. We are the last group you can make fun of.
Right
and
after
nobody,
you just assaulted her for being an Armenian.
Yeah.
I didn't assault her for being an Armenian. Mm-hmm. I just think you have to choose a language and stick with it.
Okay.
No, and it's, if
good
it's,
that
if it's,
that's recorded.
Yeah.
You're right. There's no movement to get rid of the leprechaun from, you know, was it? Lucky Charms.
Yeah. Of course
and
not.
Notre or Dame. The change the Notre Dame mascot. Yeah. Like, yeah. Everyone's
or the
like,
Celtics.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because where are they going to go from there? A banshee? No, it's downward.
No, it's...
I'm Irish. I can say this.
Yeah. Oh, you're Irish.
I am.
Oh, my God. How much Irish are you?
How much do
you're
I
probably
need to
like 1/15th Irish, and the rest is.
I'm Scots Irish. So
okay.
I'm...
That's not Irish.
The longer that we do this, the more I realize you two are very similar.
How dare you?
I'm sorry, but if I say, I went to Harry Truman's by his house the other day, you guys would be like, oh my God, the one in
I saw you there.
Yeah. I can't believe we haven't passed each other at all these different historic sites.
I know. You're also just a goddamn hipster.
But I'll say growing up, there are just all these different words that I realize are just sort of in the bloodstream. But the big thing is I grew up, my father invented words.
Oh.
His father invented words. My grandfather on my mother's side invented
like
words.
Like what? Do you remember any?
Oh, my dad, when we were, he wanted us to get going, he'd say, come on, we got to flang it and swang it. We got to flang it and swang it. Let's go.
Wait a minute. When you say that seems very sexual. And when you say we wanted us to get going, we got to flang it and swang it?
Yeah.
That's his dad.
That's my dad. And I was a kid. Don't be a creep. But anyway.
I don't think I'm the creep here.
I like flang and swang it.
No,
I like that.
No,
it's like wedding night talk. Okay.
For God's sake.
You're doubling down.
Grow up. Gamats.
Gamats. Ah, noosh. It was delicious, though.
But I think every third word, and just in my life, I mean, I didn't do it all the years broadcasting, but in my everyday life, I'm mostly speaking invented words.
Yeah, you are.
And, it's just complete nonsense. And I remember talking to my dad about it once, and I was trying to come up with an intellectual cool reason why we do this. And I said, you know, and I had read this once, there's a theory that the The Irish love to destroy and bend and twist language like James Joyce. We love to do it. We love to do it because it's a rebellion against the English language that was imposed on us by
the Scots-Irish.
Yeah, no, that was imposed on us by the British overlords that took over our country and enforced their language upon us. And this was our rebellion. And I had this whole articulate argument for why this was like a beautiful form of rebellion. My father cut me off and went, No. We do it because we can't help it. And I realized, yeah, it's right. It's just a weird compulsion we have to make up bullshit words and use them and babble away. So, anyway.
Well, it was like that mug that Greg Daniels got you that was on your desk for...
True story, yeah. When I started my late night show in September of 1993, just before I went on the air, my my writing partner, Greg Daniels, who went on to huge success.
He did a few stuff.
He did so much better without me. once he got rid of the albatross
dead
that was
weight.
Going in, yeah, the dead weight, he blew up. But he gave me this mug that I kept on my. I had the Eisenhower mug that Robert Smigel gave me years ago that I had on my desk at Saturday Night Live, and I had this drinking mug. And it was one that Greg made, and he painted on it all the words that I would babble that I had made up, gibberish and nonsense. And so I still have that mug to this day. And it was on my desk every episode of all the different shows that I had.
Yeah.
And so this was – that memorializes that this has been a problem for me my entire life.
Yeah. Yeah.
He did that. But, we can't waste any more time. I suggest we flang it and swang it.
Excuse me, human resources?
My guest today is a talented actress who has starred in such movies and shows as Super 8, Maleficent, and The Great. Oh, my God, that's a fantastic program. Now you can see her in the new Hulu series, The Girl from Plainville. I am thrilled she's with us today. Elle Fanning, welcome. I'm so happy to have you here in the studio. You have no idea how much I love what you're doing on The Great. It is the best. My wife and I watched that show. Do you?
I watched it too. Love it.
So I think it's just this new kind of level of TV. As far as I'm concerned, and that the acting is spectacular, the cast, and it is such this amazing, has this amazing ability to be hilariously funny and very dark and emotionally rooted at the same time. And you're doing all that. And all I do when I watch the show is, I met her when she was 13. She was on the show, and the wife was like, yeah.
And I think I said, my favorite food was Cobb salad. I remember that.
Yeah.
I was like, Elle Fanning's favorite food is Cobb salad, said on Conan O'Brien.
Yeah. Oh, that got such big pickup. It was the lead story in the New York Times for 2 weeks, and a lot of stuff was going on then.
Yeah.
But no one cared.
They pushed a lot of things off the front page for that specifically.
Yeah, Trump became president. No one talked about it for 2 weeks because... Elle loves her Cobb salad, she tells Conan. And but it's so weird. I have this weird quality where if I encountered someone when they were young, and it's happened a couple of times where someone's been on my show when they were literally a kid, they go on and accomplish great things and they're incredibly talented and really nice people. I have this weird feeling, fatherly, like, well, she's come a long way. I'm proud of her. And people are like, what the hell did you do?
I wondered if that's what you're insinuating.
Yeah.
You're responsible for her success.
I had nothing to do with the spectacular talent and success of Elle Fanning, but I have this weird kind of paternal, I can't explain it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, I'm proud of her. And my wife will say, shut up. But I have no idea how you're able to hit all those notes as an actor on that show. Your comedy timing and your timing with Nicholas Hoult is perfection.
He's unreal.
Well, the two of you together, and it's as I said, just this couple is hilarious. You're Desi and Lucy, but you're also Romeo and Juliet, but you're also like he's a Manson. You know, yes, like, no. It just keeps whipping around. Okay. The writing is spectacular, and that cast. I'm not going to bore everybody by gushing, but
You sound like a genuine fan. Oh, which is really nice.
I'm an insane fan of it, and I also love the approach, which is this is history, but we're also going to have fun with it. Yeah, it should be elastic. We should have a little fun with it.
We take liberties with the history. I think, I mean, it was kind of that, what do they say, like kismet or like the whole of that coming together. And because Tony McNamara is the showrunner,
right.
And he, people kind of know him from also writing The Favorite, which is like in a similar tone.
Yep.
And when the script came to me, it was a play in Australia that they had put on, mm-hmm. and the script was actually like a movie script. So it wasn't, he had an idea for it to be a series, but there was no pilot script yet. And so I read that and I hadn't seen The Favorite yet either. So I had nothing really to compare it to. But surprisingly, it is very, I mean, I don't know what people think of what my humor is, but it is very much my humor. It would be something that I
would
watch.
Is your sense of humor sort of like, 30 degrees to the left and dark?
Yes, very dark and kind of the dry satire that I don't know. The weirder, the better. The more bizarre, the better. The more offbeat. Like, that's what I want to watch and what I enjoy. So
I knew there was a reason I liked you.
I'm always telling Tony, go darker, do the weirder thing. Fine.
Because this season, I mean, it takes so many twists and turns. Mm-hmm. And it happens so often that you fall in love with the show in the first season. And the way things work now, there's a long time before the next season comes along.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking, okay, it's probably not going to be quite as good as the first season. And I thought the second season took it up a notch. And I adored the first season.
Yeah. No, and I think we kind of felt that. I mean, I think because also the tightrope of the tone was so, it's so specific because you want it to live in the truth of it, but then also it's kind of off the wall and very unbelievable things are happening that we all kind of have to be on board with and believe. And I think we really, the whole cast, like we all were really game to show up for the sexies next season and be like, okay, let's do this. And we were all like really hit the tone in the right way. But it took me a while because I'd never done comedy. So I'm like,
that's unbelievable. That's unbelievable to me. That is absolutely unbelievable to me because you and Nicholas are doing, it's the best comedy duo I've seen on television in memory.
Wow.
You two are just killing it. And one of the things that you do is you're so, and I am not an actor and no one wants me to be an actor.
I do.
No, you really don't. There's this nice agreement that I have with the world. The world doesn't want to see me be an actor and I don't want to be an actor.
Mutually assured destruction.
That's the only thing the world agrees on.
That's the one way to get everyone, that could bring the country together and bring peace everywhere. Yes. Is just to get everyone to say, like, I don't want him to be, what? Neither do I. Ladies and gentlemen, peace has broken out across the world as people are dancing in the streets that Conan O'Brien refuses to be an actor. But I can't believe you're not doing comedy. And what comes to my mind is you are so effing present in every scene and alive. Like, I can see, like, the blood's going through your cheeks, you know, mm-hmm. You're so there and light's coming off you. And I do a lot of acid before I watch your show.
Your head's a little distorted.
Yeah.
And then mushrooms.
The part where you turn into a lizard is really great. People are listening to it going, what is Conan doing when he watches The Great? We also have a malfunctioning flat screen and a lot of light just comes out of the screen.
But right under my eye.
But man, I can't believe. I mean, a lot of playing comedy is playing the truth of the scene
completely,
and that's what you're doing.
Yeah, and I mean, as an actor, that's what I always try to do is you're being in the moment and just be present. I think with the actors around me, like you were saying, the ensemble cast, everyone also mostly except for Nick come from theater.
Mm-hmm.
So that's especially with the language of our show, Tony, we are not allowed to ad lib or make up anything. We have to be word perfect with the dialogue. So it's very rigid in that sense, which it frees you up in another way to Like, you can bring any physicality you want to it. Like, the
as long as you hit those words.
Yes, you have to hit those words kind of in that specific, there's a very specific rhythm to it. And obviously it's in an English accent, so that adds to like the juiciness of the words. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to say those, the dialogue in that accent. It doesn't.
Oh, I can't tell you how many people I know just now say huzzah about everything.
Yeah.
And you know, they'll watch an auto accident in the street and go huzzah.
Well, you hang out with a lot of people from Ren Fairs, though.
I do. I'm a Renaissance Fair guy. And so I was always doing it, but.
Yeah, it can really mean anything. But I think, I mean, Nick, he was in The Favorite, Nicholas Holt. And yeah. So he was very used to the rhythm of it. And he's a very natural, he's just a naturally really funny guy. And like, he was in About a Boy with Hugh Grant. I think he's Hugh Grant-y in a way.
You know what's so funny to me? Yeah. When I realized that he was the boy in About a Boy, my mind split open and my brain fell out and then it split open.
And both parts a lot started, of acid.
And then, yeah.
We're discovering a lot.
I know.
You know, I thought I was microdosing, and it turns out I was doing a lot of microdosing at the same time.
Oh no!
Which it turns out is not microdosing.
It's not.
Yeah,
you were just microdosing and setting those aside, and then taking the rest.
I'd microdose, then I'd have a full dose, then have some more microdoses. It's the way you eat potato chips.
I feel like the way that you watch this show is exactly how Tony intended it for it to be watched.
Well, you should do a little disclaimer up front. This show, you know, the way they'll put, like, there'll be some flashing lights in this episode. Also, much better if you've done an incredible amount of microdosing, which is called macrodosing. So, you know, one of the reasons that, I mean, obviously you have a great natural gift, but you have been doing this. You were acting in the womb, I believe. Yeah. That was your first role.
In the sonogram.
In the sonogram. You actually...
they saw me.
You were doing this, I think, when you were two, weren't you?
I was just method acting.
You were doing a lot of space work, you know, in the placenta. Yeah. And people were like, take it easy.
Mime hands.
Yeah, mime hands. I remember the doctor was like, she's good. Yeah. She's really good.
Very convincing.
Yeah. You started so young.
Yes, I did. Well, obviously, my sister started, you know, she's 4 years older than me. And, you know, this was not the plan. Like, my whole family is all has a sports background. My mom played tennis. My dad played professional baseball. My mom's dad was a quarterback in the NFL for the Eagles.
Whoa.
Like, everyone was sports. And my sister and I were supposed to play tennis. Like, we were supposed to be tennis sisters, like Venus and Serena.
Right.
Like, and it just, my sister was older, so she kind of tried out all the activities and she didn't like tennis. She didn't like it. You know, you're pale. And so
I'm sorry. You know what? This is how white I am. Elle Fanning just pointed at me and said, "You're really white." That's as white as it gets. When I see Kabuki theater, the performers are like, "Oh my God, look. Look.
One of us.
One of us." I've had real ghosts stop me on the street and say, "Sunscreen, you're a ghost."
Oh my God.
But anyway, yes, you and I have a similar.
We have very pink undertones, I would say, to our skin.
Yeah.
And we sunburn very easily. And my sister does as well. Like, my mom is very tan. So her out in the sun playing tennis, it doesn't affect her as much as it did sister.
You and your sister cannot be playing tennis out in the sun.
Yeah.
You can play it in an arena with its clothes, but you cannot play outside.
Yeah. It just, when she was, you know, three or four or out there. I mean, my mom had her out there young. Maybe she was probably too young, but she was like, she just hated it because she was just baking. And so my mom then put her into this theater group, and she has a photographic memory. So she was five and she could memorize all the lines, and she got the lead in the play. It was called Bluefish, and she was the bluefish in the play.
Wow.
And she was five and very young to be doing that, but they were like, "You should go to LA or New York." And I stayed at, in Georgia because we were born in Georgia. I stayed there with my dad, and my mom and my sister flew out to LA for pilot season.
Oh, wow.
And she got 10 commercials in 1 week.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then got I Am Sam, the first film that she did when she was six with Sean Penn. And my mom's like, okay, I guess we're not coming home because all this work is like, we're not coming home.
She calls home from a mansion.
My dad's like,
I know we've only been gone a few days, but we have a mansion on a large hill above Beverly Hills.
Yeah, so we flew over, needless to say.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. We're not leaving Georgia.
And like, we just never went back. And then obviously, like, seeing, you know, a big sister, whatever she did, I wanted to do. And so I kind of was tagging along, and I played her in I Am Sam younger.
Oh.
I was my first thing, because I was on set. Like, my mom was holding me, and the director was like, they needed someone for a flashback sequence for my sister. And she's like, well, obviously, you know, you look like her. So they threw me in I had to swing on a swing with Sean Penn and sleep in the grass. That was my first thing.
Right. You know, it's so funny you say that, because I'm thinking it just gave me the idea that I should find someone who can play me younger. You know, because I'm getting old fast. When you were on the show and you were 13, I was like in my 40s. I'm 77 now. I don't know what happened. And you look exactly the same. You're a little older, but I am rotting quickly. And so I should find someone who can play me younger.
Like, will you in still life? Do
the voice?
Yeah.
What's that?
Will you still do the voice? Or
I want someone who just take over and be Conan O'Brien, and I'll be at home getting the checks.
Okay.
Oh.
You know what I mean? But it'll be a younger, acceptable
that
Conan O'Brien.
That seems like abuse.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't do that. Yeah.
They get no money.
Yeah. No, I would give them like, I would pay them hundreds of dollars a week. What are you talking about?
They would get the fame, though.
You know what we'll do? Fame. We'll have you play me younger.
Great.
When there's a movie about my life, I would love you'll play. There'll be a period of time.
Called Pink Undertone.
Nothing brings a family together like a large two-topping pizza. It's the perfect way to celebrate any occasion. This happens all the time at my house.
Yeah.
I say, kids, let's get together. Your father wants to tell you stories of his childhood. Nobody comes running, all right? But guess what? When I get one of those two large two-topping pizzas at Domino's, suddenly everybody wants to hear from Daddy. At Domino's, you can carry out large two-topping pizzas for just $6.99 for this week only. No limit on number of pizzas. You know, what toppings do you like? I like pepperoni.
I like pepperoni. I like olive. I like bell pepper. I like mushrooms. I know you don't like mushrooms. I like mushrooms.
Yeah. Well, you didn't have to out me as a no mushroom guy, but okay. Domino's Pizza. That's the way to get the whole family together. And this is a great deal. Visit Domino's.com or use the app to order your large two-topping pizzas for $6.99 each. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 4/22 through 4/28. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary. Sona, what would you do with $100 billion? Seriously.
Oh, I would buy a country.
Okay. I would buy just a ton of yachts and private jets, and I would duct tape them all together and then just have it go in a circle in the Pacific Ocean.
What?
Yeah. I don't know, just to be a total jerk. Anyway, there is a correct answer.
Oh.
And it's build incredible cities in fantastical locations while competing with your friends to be the biggest tycoon in the world. What do you think of that answer?
That's better than mine.
Yep, and mine, which you can do with Monopoly Go, the hit mobile game that's so much fun, it's been downloaded over 150 million times. It's the fun of classic Monopoly on the go, anytime, anywhere, endless new surprises like tons of boards and crazy mini games. You can team up with your chums on community chess and tournaments to get big money, or you can go after their fortune-changing rent on your properties or even pulling a bank heist on them. So much fun. It's incredible. So start building up your billions today. Go download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store and Google Play. If you're being honest, no one really knows what you do for work, especially if you're in B2B. That's a business doing business with other businesses.
Oh, I didn't know you knew what that was.
I know exactly what that is. B2B, I use that all the time. Businesses doing businesses with other businesses. Fortunately, LinkedIn has a network of professionals who get what you do, and you can reach the right people who matter most to your company.
LinkedIn has over 1 billion members on its platform, including 70 million decision makers.
That's good.
Since LinkedIn members are regularly updating their work history, you can precisely build a target audience by job title, industry, company, and more. Start reaching the right people for your, get ready, B2B business with LinkedIn ads. Gets even better because LinkedIn will give you a $100 credit on your next campaign.
That's crazy.
Yeah, just go to linkedin.com/Team Coco to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/Team Coco. Terms and conditions apply. I get to say this again. Listen, LinkedIn, the place to be, right?
That's cool.
Business to business.
That's really cool.
So you got started doing this, and obviously it becomes, you must have realized really quickly, like, this is it. This is what I want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I was, you can see from, like, home videos and things, like, I was just such a ham. Like, my sister and I would put on these elaborate, we would play together, but we didn't want to perform it for anyone.
Right.
But we would do scenes with each other kind of in secret, and, like, you know, we would set design it and, like, move all the chairs around and make the scene, and then just, we wouldn't write it down or anything, but we would just take on these characters. Like, I was always the assistant to her,
Right.
I was always, like, the sidekick in the scenarios, but that was the most fun. We just wanted to get home so we could play. And obviously she had, you know, she had been on sets, like, from a young age and stuff. I remember, I think it was a huge deal. Like, she was a guest star on ER once, and all she wanted was the doctor. Like, they had real, I mean, not with syringes and stuff, like, the needles weren't in there, but, like, all the doctor stuff. And she wanted the real stuff so she could bring it home and we could play doctor with the real stuff. So they gave the ER.
And they have some serious stuff there.
They had a lot of things.
She came home with a defibrillator.
Yeah.
Yeah. My teddy bear had a heart attack. Clear.
Fire.
We just, you know, we wanted to make it real right from the beginning.
The first time you were on my show, I remembered you were, I think, almost asking me for advice because you had just gone through a crazy growth spurt.
Yes.
And that's right. You looked at me as someone who clearly something terrible had happened to. And you were like, can you help me? My body is, you know, stretched out and strange at the moment. What happens next? And I was like, okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
But so I remember giving you some advice.
Because I grew 7 inches in 1 year around when I was 12, 13.
Wow.
Yeah, and I physically hurt. And you said the same. I was like, I'm writhing in pain on my,
used to roll out of my bed. I was lived up in the attic. They put me in the attic, which tells you a lot. Along with my brother Neil. They were like, you two are up in the attic and don't come down. But I would roll what would happen is I get those, my calf muscles would just, my bones were growing faster than my muscle. And so I would roll out of the bed screaming in the morning and, like, hit the floor and be like, ah, because I was growing like the Hulk, you know, not muscle. Just straight up. And it was a freak show. It was a terrible freak show.
Painful.
But I grew into my body, I think, when I turned 50.
You feel good.
So you're getting used to it.
You right away grew into yourself. It took me about 40 years to do it. But.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy, and I'm not, like, freakishly tall, but I did enjoy being, I always saw it as a good thing. Like, even though, although, you know, in school, the boys were so much shorter than a lot of the girls, you know. During, you know, in, like, elementary school. But
what's tougher for, I mean, I meet a lot of women who are tall who say that they used to hate it.
Yeah.
But then they grow to love it. They grow to really like it, the sense of power. And it's cool.
I like
cool.
the confidence, and I'm not afraid to, like, wear heels and, you know, just.
I wear heels and I love it.
Right.
I think we have something else in common, which is I heard you say in an interview once that you almost feel like you're out of time, like that you were born at the wrong time, which is something I've always felt about myself. In what way do you mean it?
I have always felt like, and I'm like, does this sound like pretentious? And I'm like, do I like those people that say, oh, I was born in the wrong era? You know, it's like, well, they're, like, strumming a guitar. Like,
that's the way I say it.
I'm like, oh, that's kind of, when hearing it back now, I'm like,
I'm
that's
very
kind
pretentious
of annoying.
When I say it, yeah.
But I do feel it. And I've talked to a psychic and they said that I have come from the past to tell people how good it used to be, which was really interesting because I'm someone that I've always loved vintage clothes and like antique stores and like wandering in there. Like I just feel something about it. And I feel like I'm nostalgic for something that I never experienced.
You never experienced. You weren't there for it.
I was like, I wasn't there. So why am I so drawn to old photographs or seeing like just... There's something about it. It's hard to explain. And people also tell me that I have a very period looking face.
Yes.
In a, you know, like.
It's a compliment, it does.
Not the menstrual cycle way, but the, you know.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
You just thought Conan very uncomfortable.
What a horrible turn of events. Well, we're out of time. I'm going to wrap this up. Lovely having you. And you're never to come back here again.
Your whole demeanor changed. Your whole body.
I went inside myself.
I mean, obviously, I'm like playing Catherine the Great. Like, I've been cast for a lot of old-timey roles because I think my face can suit different eras. I don't know if it's
it's
the nose.
It's true that you look like, you know, John Singer Sargent could have done a portrait of you. You have that kind of, and every now and then you'll meet people that have that sort of, there's a classic quality to their face and the way they carry themselves. Is there a certain era? Because I know with me, I'm always sort of drawn to like turn of the century or 1920s when technology, nice. I'm terrible at technology, but I love Bakelite phones, like kooky phones and old typewriters. Yeah. And I love all that stuff. Yeah. And I love like rubber stamps. When I was a kid, I just always wanted to have an office with a rubber stamp.
Yes.
And I wanted to stamp things and then say, here are your papers, you know, and I always wanted to answer a big, heavy phone. You know, that's Wrigley 255,
right?
You know, and that was what I wanted. And I was sort of disappointed to be living at a time when people were, you know, with their boy bands and stuff.
I know. I'm not someone that I definitely really was like that. I think mine was the 50s. Like that's kind of era. And I've talked said this before, but like Marilyn Monroe, I was very like a lot of people are, but when I was young, like I was like 7 years old and I saw a photo of her and I just was like,
who is that?
Who is this? And I went to, I don't know why I had to go, like, I went to a DVD store to buy it and
would you get one of her?
To one of her, yeah, like the 7 year itch. Yeah, I mean, now I'm like, oh, you could just find it on the internet. But I guess, I don't know. We went there and like scoured, and it was like a mission to get the 7 year itch, which I was way too young to see, but I did not understand the subject matter at all. And then, but I wanted to watch it. And then there was an auction that came out of, it was like one of the bigger last auctions of like one of her storage units. Mm-hmm. And I had seen, that it was like advertised. And so my grandmother and my mom took me and I dressed up as her was trying on her bras. Like people were like, who is this child? Like in the, cause you could like.
You were trying on Marilyn Monroe's bras?
Yeah, because you could go, it was, what do they have?
See, when I did that, they asked me to leave. I was like, I just want to know what it's, you know, before I buy something at auction.
I know. I think kind of explore, but I do have her from that auction. Like the only thing that you could, you know, that was not too expensive was her face cream and face powder, like Max Factor.
Okay, sure.
So I do have that still.
Is it usable? Not that you'd ever use it, but like on a special occasion,
tried to use it, but my mom was like, absolutely don't do that. But the cream is like glued shut and the powder's still in there though. There's still a little bit of like orangey powder, chalky powder. Yeah. I don't know.
Do you, what about Grace Kelly?
Love Grace Kelly.
I was going to say that there's.
Yes. That is my dream part to play if they ever did. I would have to be older, but if they ever did a movie, I think they have before, but if they ever wanted to do another one, like.
Yeah. Well, I was going to just looking at you and thinking you are the person to play Grace Kelly and you would kill it.
That
would
be cool.
You would just absolutely nail it. And I'll start writing it.
Right, great.
Oh, no.
I know you were hinting.
No.
No.
Grace Kelly falls into a time machine.
Oh, she gets one shot at this.
Yeah. How embarrassing would it be if I now submitted a script to you and just kept I kept calling your people and you were like, oh my god, I mean, he seemed like a nice guy, but it's, have you read it? It's terrible. Grace Kelly, she goes back to the time of the dinosaurs.
Wait, now I'm interested.
Kinda. So weird, it might work.
And I keep, yeah, but I keep, I don't know, I'm lobbying and I'm getting money together, and you're like, oh my God, what do I do? He keeps coming by the house.
I would be
polite. I know, you're a very nice person. You'd be very polite, but I just love, because you're so nice. There are plenty of people who would have no problem just telling me to buzz off. But,
so anyway, did you get it? Because I sent it, and then I dropped off a copy.
And I thought I'd play Cary Grant.
Yeah. I just looked at Cary Grant and I thought, well, we could draw the dimple on, and then if you draw on the dimple, you've got Cary Grant. Judy, Judy, Judy.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
I've got all the money lined up.
This is great. I have my next gig lined up.
Right? Yeah, yeah, that's really good. Don't, you know what's great? You have very good people around you. Right. Yeah. They'll stop it.
My publicist in there is just like, oh,
she's passed out. Yeah.
She's, now, I did something recently, and then I found out that you did the same thing. I did a DNA test to find out about who I'm related to.
Well, this is even funny. So I actually did not do this. This was a fan.
Oh, this is fake news.
Well, it is. But now I'm like, how did they get DNA? I mean, I guess
they
didn't get DNA, though. Now I'm thinking back. They did. I'm creeped out by this.
No,
actually.
I was like reading through research, and then it said that you and your sister are related to someone.
Yes, we are, because this person did this. But
they don't need DNA to find that.
Okay,
no one snuck into the barbershop and stole your hair. That's right. You go to a barbershop. I love that you sit in a barbershop. Hey, Lou.
Just two old-timey people.
Why did I say you go to a barbershop? This beautiful A-list actress.
With
I'm like, when you're
the
at the barbershop,
yeah.
Hey, Lou, a little off the top.
What's that thing called with the red and white thing? And the
barbershop. Yeah.
That's
and people
exactly
are,
it.
Other super famous actresses are in the corner and they're just reading like Life magazines from the 1960s.
Oh, but man. This is true. Someone did it without DNA.
Yeah, they just looked into your family lineage.
Exactly. Yes. And we have a lot of English. And a little bit of Irish, but really mostly English. And then German. My dad's side's German.
Right.
Yeah, I think we're related to like King
Edward III.
Edward III.
Yeah. According to this.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is crazy. I'm related to King Edward II.
My
family. Hey. Wow.
But you guys just high-fived.
Conan's so angry right now.
I'm so mad right now because, you guess who I'm related to? Nobody.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely nobody.
Oh, no.
We've looked and looked and looked. Lisa Kudrow, I've mentioned this before, but Lisa Kudrow does this show called Who Do You Think You Are? And we've been friends forever. Mm-hmm. And she said, Conan, you've got to do my show. And I said, Lisa, you're not going to find anything where I'm 100% Irish.
You've never done it?
And no. And well, she said, no, please, please. We're going to find such great stuff. So I like spit into a vial and sent it off. Yeah. And they actually got me for an old crime.
You had COVID.
Turns out it's a sting operation. Yeah. There was a guy that was spitting a lot in the 70s and they caught him. No. I didn't hear back from her. And she was like, they're going to find something. Everyone says they're not going to find anything. And this star said they wouldn't find anything in this star. But we found out this, we found out that. Don't you worry. And then I didn't hear from her. And then I called her up and she was like, yeah, there's nothing.
Wow.
Just a bunch of people that stood in a field with potatoes throwing them at each other.
But you found out you were 100% Irish.
I did find out, and I've talked about this, but I found out that I'm 100.00% Irish.
Whoa.
Which is impossible.
That's rare. Probably.
Which is rare. Yeah. And I at first was excited, like, that must mean something really, really cool. And the person I was talking to said, the specialist said, no, it means you're inbred.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Which explains so much.
It's just a matter of how far back you're inbred, or
right.
Well, let's not get too much into it.
Yeah, he knows. Let's he just doesn't want to say.
Let's just not get that into it.
Okay.
No, it basically means it's a, you know, it's a small island, and 100% Irish people came over here and then moved into one house in central Massachusetts.
Oh no!
And lived there for 200 years.
Oh,
and
man.
Yeah. But
okay.
Yeah, but I can smell colors. I have all kinds of superpowers.
Wow.
I can climb a wall like a spider. Wow. So that's, but yeah, you must have all kinds of, because when people have English heritage and German heritage, then you just find out all kinds of amazing
stuff. It would be
stuff.
Cool to go on that show. I do have that 23andMe kit that I could do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they can buy those.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The names of some of the people in your lineage here, Thirza. Absalom. These are first names.
This is what I'm going to name my kids. Like 100%.
Absalom.
Absalom. Thirza.
Thirza. Oh,
no, Thirza. You are not going to go see the Dua Lipa show. This is Absalom.
This is my son, Lionel of Antwerp.
Oh, God. I do not know any of this.
This is all here Googleable.
Ooh. Googleable.
That's one of your lineage people. Googleable.
Wow. I mean, you just mentioned
your ancestors.
Google, come here. You mentioned you know, kids, and it brought me back to how you had to play being pregnant this season. And one of the things that was so, I mean, first of all, you did an amazing job of it, but also this whole side of your character, Catherine, needing to eat dirt.
Yeah.
Get, you know, this craving for iron.
Yeah,
and then
it's called, that's called something. Iron deficiency pregnancy. It's
anemia?
No, they call it something else. I don't know.
Did you have it?
I had iron deficiency.
Is that, so maybe that was it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, anemia. But I thought there was something when you like actually eat the rusty.
Pica craving?
Pica craving.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. But and, you, because probably.
And Catherine, your character, so you, it looks like you're like sucking on iron nails, but I'm guessing they give you something else.
Well, it was interesting so the dirt was just, you know, crushed up Oreos, like, you know, chocolate.
I could tell you were enjoying it way too much. Yeah. Let's shoot the dirt eating scene again.
Yeah.
Oh, I messed up my line.
Yeah.
Oops, I messed up.
Oh, we have it. We have it 10 different ways. I just think we need it again.
Take
we're out of dirt.
Yeah. Put it in a baggie.
Yeah, exactly. Like, can you wrap that up for me and take home?
You're supposed to eat some and then say your line. But you just kept eating for 40 minutes. So that's what they did for the. So what do they do for the nail?
For the nail, it was they made it out of chocolate and kind of put cocoa powder on it. But then when we did the close-ups, it was getting all over my mouth, like melted chocolate. So I was like, they had a real one. And so I was like, I'll do the real one. I mean, they cleaned it off as good as they could, but I did
and
that was
fine.
And
then you got a
tetanus
shot.
Yeah, exactly. And then rose petals as well, she craves. Yep. So, and those were made out of fondant.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Delicious.
Very interesting. Yes, very.
I'd love to hang around the craft service table on the Catherine
shoot.
The food
on
the great
that show is really incredible, the food. But also they really take it quite literally, like in a beautiful way, like our, because all of that is, they're all sets. We film on location for the exteriors and occasionally sometimes in some homes, but everything else is built, like all the bedrooms. It's literally in East London next to a McDonald's is our, you know, is our Russia. So
but how do you do those palaces? Can't fake that.
The outside, we go to, you know, homes on the countryside or Italy. The first season we went to Italy. We couldn't the second because it was during the pandemic. But yeah, the food there, I was saying, it's like they really are like, if it's, you know, Tony is a big foodie. So if he writes something in, like it's a liver heart pate with, you know, they really do that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yes. And then we didn't realize that the first season. And Nick and I, we had to like eat something and take a shoot of vodka. And like, the vodka's not real, though.
Right.
Like, but we bit into it. We were like, what is it? We're like, what is this? And then the props guys, it's chicken heart. We're like, oh my God, no. Like, we can't have this repeatedly. He's like, he's like, well, we did have a mushroom version, but we didn't think, we're like, yeah, we'll take that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it is quite, it's beautiful because it's very accurate and like it's done so well, but sometimes not the.
Well, I just love also that really the one of the reasons, or maybe the main reason that, Peter abdicates is because he's hungry.
Totally.
He's trapped on this island and he could, he doesn't have to, but you guys start cooking really good food with his favorite chef.
Right.
And he's, and then he's just too hungry.
He's too hungry.
And so he gives up the throne.
Even in that.
which is so great because it's so believable, you know?
It's totally his character, you know, completely. But he also, when Nick had to eat that squirrel, it was real squirrel.
No.
Yes.
Jesus.
I know. Everything got really severe. Man. I didn't know that because I wasn't there that day. And when we were doing interviews and press, he told me, he started saying that. I'm like, oh my God, like you agreed to this? But he said, you know, it tastes like chicken. Like,
he might just like squirrel.
Yeah. No, that's his pregnancy craving.
Oh no. Now the press is going to pick that up.
Nick.
Sorry, Nick. You know, I wanted to talk about this new project.
Yes.
One of the things I love about this series, and I haven't watched the whole thing yet, but I've started it, is it's a true story. Mm-hmm. The girl from Plainville. And it is such a hard turn from what you're doing in The Great. And no surprise, you're excellent in this. It's a heartbreaking story. It's a real story.
It is, yes.
People may remember this case.
Yeah, it kind of was a case that riveted everyone while it was happening and was kind of splashed across all of our TV screens.
It's something that could, I think, only happen in this new crazy world we're in.
Completely.
And I think that's what makes it such a compelling and sad story is, you know, Michelle Carter pretty much over texts, convinces or helps encourage her friend who's talked about suicide into doing it. Mm-hmm. And I have to say it's a true story. So, you know, this really happened and you kind of wish it wasn't a true story, but it is.
No.
And it's so bizarre, but the turn that your character takes and the acting that you do to really show both sides of it, which is that yes, you did this, but you're also in an emotional wreck when this person goes through with it and commits suicide.
Yeah.
But then you're also kind of looking at yourself, as you can see so many kids doing in this world today, observing yourself.
How you're reacting.
How you're reacting and kind of enjoying that.
And the attention, you know.
Yes, what am I going to wear to the funeral?
Yeah.
And it's it just hits on about 75 things that are new to our world in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's very strong. It's very, but as I said, as I told you when I saw you, you know, anything where someone loses a child, it's just like, oh my God, this is, it really tears your lungs out to see it.
Difficult. I know. I think that was something that like weighed heavy on all of us. I mean, when the project came to me, I was aware of the case, but I was aware of very much what everyone else was, whereas like the media kind of portrayed this case in one way and it was very black and white. And, they portrayed her as this kind of manipulating black widow. And then he was her victim, which he very much was a victim in this, and it ended in, you know, the worst way and this ultimate tragedy. But we also didn't get to know him at all. He was very much just labeled as that he committed suicide. And that's all that was right. You know, suicide was right next to this young boy's name who had so much more in his life. It wasn't until there's an HBO documentary called I Love You Now Die and an Esquire article that Jesse Barron wrote, where those two things really dig deeper in the case. And it wasn't until they approached me to possibly do this that I kind of not saw it from another side, but maybe saw it from an unbiased perspective. There was a bit.
It's more complicated.
It's more complicated, but it wasn't, you know, necessarily like an automatic, yes, I'm going to do this. I really had to think about it because these people are obviously alive. A life was lost. There's like a real responsibility here. And I think the story could easily have been very, like the series at least could have been very sensationalized and romanticized. And that just wasn't what I was interested in doing. Because,
well, it is not. Yeah. It's not a Hallmark movie.
No.
It's not a movie of the week. And I think what's you have these emotional scenes where you're just devastated and I'm watching it and you're just – you are that. I know that I'm going to be talking to you. I watched yesterday and I was like, I know I'm going to be talking to you today. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea how you do a scene like that. And then they yell, they say cut. And how do you How do you get back to you from that? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That just feels like...
It's a strange thing that, because obviously, I don't know, in every part that you play, there's always, you know, a couple of those scenes, you know, throughout a film, or there's the big, okay, that's the big old crying scene, or that's the big old emotional scene that you're like, either there's a sense of dread or just anticipation, or like that day of
right.
just trying to get in the zone. I think weirdly, because even though, I mean, I did play sports in school, but the way that my family kind of works is we are very like a sports mentality. And so I kind of go into it like I was gearing up for a game or something. And it's very much blinders on, and kind of, it's a weird sensation. You have to block things out, but you also have to be very aware of your surroundings. Mm-hmm. Like you have to actually make yourself incredibly open, like incredibly open to everything, and almost like it's very important to laugh or like almost feel opposite feelings to kind of get you in that space. It's really psychological and strange, but I can come out of it pretty easily. This one, I think this series was a little harder.
I think a real testament to your ability and what you're able to do is to go from The Great to then The Girl from Plainville, hit all the right notes in both, but they're so 90 degree in opposition to each other, you know? And, that's pretty amazing.
Thanks. I think that that actually helps. It's odd. Like if I tried to go from, you know, a comedy to a comedy, I feel like the second one would probably be worse. I mean, that's not necessarily true, but if you're trying to recreate something, it's almost like you need some breathing room to just, when picking roles and stuff, I really like just kind of veering off and not doing the expected thing or, you know.
Well, when you do play the young Conan O'Brien.
Oh, boy.
That'll be.
I will coach you through.
Oh, jeez.
And when you get my script for you as Grace Kelly.
I'm sorry.
Time traveling Grace Kelly. Oh, and by the way, I'm putting the finishing touches on that thing as we speak.
Oh, so sorry.
I'm going to be up all night writing.
We're really sorry.
We're sorry.
All they do is apologize.
Yeah. That's our job.
Yeah, that's right. I brought two people in to just apologize for my behavior.
So sorry.
Do damage control. Yeah.
No, Elle, I'm just in absolute awe of what you can do. And like I say, my wife and I just sit there and watch your performance on The Great.
Thank you. We're
just completely blown away. And I'm just going to start saying, as if I had anything to do with it, I'm really proud of Elle Fanning. I really feel like you've come a long way under my tutelage.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, I remember, like, it's so funny because when they asked me to come on this, I was like, it was automatic. I was just like, oh, yeah. Like, I feel like I know you. Maybe we knew each other
kind of
past that. There is something weird.
In a past life, I think I threw a potato
and
at you.
And also my psychic.
I remember a carriage going by and this very regal woman.
And that's how I died. And then my spirit.
You're here for revenge.
Yeah.
You're
exactly.
here for revenge.
We'll hold
Who
him
gets
down.
Killed by getting hit by a potato? That's on you. You had a very soft skull in that life.
That's why I'm like, French fries aren't my favorite. They're fine.
They shouldn't. This is why. No, Elle, as seriously, anything I can ever do for you in any capacity, let me know because
you.
You're the best. You really
Thank
are.
You. You're the
and,
best.
And you're a lovely person. So, Elle Fanning, come on.
Yay.
You know, it's incredible to have the flexibility to work in all sorts of places, whether it's taking video calls from the park or emailing large files while you're grocery shopping. Sona, this is good for you.
Is it?
Because you're always doing whatever work you do for me from fun locations.
But I like blaming it on not having reception.
I know, but you can't do that here. Working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network, which is why you should check out T-Mobile, Sona.
Okay.
Then you got no excuses. They're America's largest and fastest 5G network. With T-Mobile, you'll be covered in more places with the 5G speed you need for your life on the go. Plus, they also cover more highway miles with 5G than anybody else. Check it out if you don't believe me. Hey, Blay, you've got T-Mobile, right?
I do. I was actually just up in the woods in Idlewild. It was fantastic for the weekend, and my T-Mobile didn't miss it. My T-Mobile phone didn't miss it.
You know, I wouldn't think you'd need a cell phone because you speak so loudly into a microphone.
Well, I had to look some stuff up.
Just take it down.
I didn't know what brunch was.
I can hear him.
When the restaurant's open for brunch.
Okay.
So I used my T-Mobile coverage to check out brunch.
That's all right.
Anyway, wherever you are, you know, take it from the loudspeaking Blay. If you're on the go, you want to be in the know, you want to make the show.
What?
T-Mobile. Okay. That's the one for you.
That was
I should
weird.
Have rhymed it with go. Anyway, find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today. Coverage not available in some areas. Fastest based on median overall combined 5G speeds, according to analysis by Ookla of Speed Test Intelligence Data Q3 2023. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com. Okay, you freaks, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, multiple systems, and delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Right,
yeah,
guys?
That's what I think about all the time.
That's all I think about. I'm a real whiz. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. It just does.
Yeah.
Words.
So to reduce, what's that?
Words.
Yeah, exactly. That helped. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. You knew where I was going with this, right?
Yeah, I do. Please tell us what NetSuite is.
I shall. NetSuite's the number one cloud financial system. It brings accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one, count them, one platform and one source of truth.
Yeah.
By bringing all your major business processes into one platform, you will not only improve efficiency, you'll also cut costs. Yep. NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessible from anywhere. That's why they call it the cloud. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. If you're not doing it, you should too. Hey, so do the math. That sounds aggressive. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Wow. Head to netsuite.com/Conan. netsuite.com/Conan. One more time if you weren't listening. netsuite.com/Conan.
Every once in a while, we like to do a very official state of the podcast just to make sure that the state of the podcast is, in fact, strong.
Hmm. Well, what can you tell us about the podcast? How's it?
It's strong.
That's good.
Okay.
Yeah. That's good. We've
well, I guess that's the end of the segment.
Good night.
We did it.
Okay.
No, it's. I think it's right and proper that occasionally we check in and see how we're doing, how yes. we feel about what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because as I've said before, we sort of started this thing on a whim and it has grown and continues to grow. And I think that to be responsible, we should check in and think, are we still sticking with our core values of
right.
what
it's
this podcast should be?
Like a shareholder call where we need to be accountable to the listeners that we are doing our due diligence.
What's
yeah.
the core now, values?
Yeah, well, what are the core values?
I don't know what
this
that means.
This podcast has values at all?
Oh, yeah.
Much less
I wrote
core
out,
values?
I wrote out a very explicit, almost constitution for this show when it started, this podcast. Mm-hmm. And it's all about how all power flows from me.
Oh, God.
You know,
pass.
I'm sort of like the president and Congress and
oh, a dictator
and the Supreme Court.
The yeah. Pharaoh and your Picasso.
Yeah, okay. Star. Well, whatever. No. It's a very intricate chart that I worked out. And I do think that we have my biggest fear is that success can corrupt any enterprise. Uh-huh. And the podcast has been, you know, I like to be modest, but it has been quite successful and continues to grow.
And quite corrupted.
And also simultaneously corrupted, which defeats my theory. no, it actually improves my theory. It's important to me that we haven't changed in any way. I became, at the risk of being immodest, acclimated to success.
Oh, God.
So many years ago, really in my teens,
take nice
when I was part of a boy band.
I
was,
oh,
what band yeah, was that?
Doing It Right.
Oh.
I was in Doing
I'm
It Right.
I think if I remember that.
Yeah, I was in Doing It Right. We came out of. It's a true story. We were the only boy band to come out of suburban Boston.
What are you sure doing you, right?
Yeah. Doing It Right. Yeah.
Sure
doing
you
It Right.
A failed sitcom pilot?
No. Okay. We were doing it right. And it was me and a bunch of other guys, Miles, Elliot.
You couldn't remember the other
yeah. one. The other guys weren't great. Miles and Elliot were terrific.
So you were the Justin Timberlake.
Oh, I was definitely
right?
the Timberlake.
Oh my God.
And we toured. So a lot of people don't know that. I was successful long before you ever saw me on Late Night or I was a writer.
How do people not know that if you were successful?
Well, it's interesting. We were niche.
I see.
Niche success. Meaning, we had four real groupies, people that followed us and came and saw us perform.
So you were like an indie boy band with cred that wouldn't sell out to the limelight?
No, we were an indie boy band with no cred. The reviews were atrocious, but we mostly... We played shopping malls, and we never got out of the shopping mall stage.
I see.
And you're supposed to start there and get a few videos and then hit it big. But we did have a couple of great songs.
Any?
Which ones?
We Be Who We Be was a good one.
It's a pirate song.
Yeah. And then...
We Be Who We Be
by
Doing It Right.
Yeah. Sex With Me, Yes Please was one.
It's a question and an answer.
Featuring Yoda.
Sex With Me, Yes Please. Mm-hmm. And we played along and, you know, Miles and Elliot, the three of us were in sync. And then there were these other two assholes. I don't remember their names.
What do you mean you were in sync?
What? We were in sync. Oh, not like the band.
Oh, I see.
We were just, we understood each other. We were in a good groove.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The point I was trying to make is long before I was a writer or anything like that, or anyone knew me, before I even went to college when I was a teenager, I was in this band.
Hot years.
Yeah.
And we toured a little bit. So I had some acclaim. Anyway, I have been, inured to getting a swelled head. I can't get a big ego just because
your ego's so big, it can't get any bigger. Yeah.
No, that's not the point I'm making. It's just that I'm acclimated to success. Now, you two, there's a danger. There's a danger that you would change. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, in my opinion, that is the biggest danger to the podcast, is that Gorley would start to, I don't know, get a little full of himself, or that Sona, you would start to think, this podcast is nothing without me. Yeah. I'm really the one that they tune in for. And then
that's probably true.
And then the problem is, then the whole thing can go awry.
Right.
So when we discuss the state of the podcast, to me, that means I know the numbers are great and it's growing all the time. And it's, whatever, I guess some people would refer to it as a sensation. That's not important.
Oh, God. Yeah,
there's no danger of your head getting any bigger.
A sensation.
I'm just reading trade press. But anyway, the big danger to me, I read all the podcast journals. There's a lot of them.
Read anything?
Yeah,
podcast. I've worked in podcasts for a long time. I had never seen any of these journals.
You don't read Podcast Weekly?
Mm-mm.
Huh.
And this is a print publication?
Well, they make a few of them. They usually get stolen. It's more of a flyer they hand out. If you go to Trader Joe's and you hang out by the salsas, eventually someone's going to hand you a Podcast Weekly.
That's probably true.
Yeah. You'll get one. So, that would be the big concern to me. And I have to say, I think the podcast is strong because neither one of you has changed.
Right.
Gorley, you are still Gorley in all your Gorliness. And Sona, you are still loud, belligerent.
Right. I think a part of that is I had no idea anyone was listening to this podcast. I'm so sorry.
You know how I know people are listening to it?
I know that.
Everywhere I go, people shout stuff from the podcast at me.
Yeah.
And which is nice. I like it. The funniest thing is they'll bring up stuff from the interviews and I won't remember what they're talking about.
If you ever need to say something to a podcaster, you must provide context. That's true. That's very true.
Because it's such a volume of babble and talking.
And often some of the things you're just hearing might have been recorded weeks, if not months
ago.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know. I think because I always am in awe of how grounded you are, even though you've had a lot of success. I know it pains me to say this, but I think a lot of it is, even though you get like all this, love and adoration when you're out, when you go home, your family is just like, it's Conan. Kids are like, oh, it's dad. It's like, no one cares.
Trust me, nothing has saved me more from, nothing has saved my life more than the total disinterest and disdain I get, not just at my family at home, but from my family back in Massachusetts,
Yeah.
they aren't having it. They've never been having it.
No one cares.
They don't care. I did a show the other night that went really well, and my wife and my daughter came to it. And then when I get home, by the time I got home, it's like I never had done anything.
Yeah.
I get in there, did you take the trash out?
It literally
did
is.
Did you put the dog to make sure that he peed?
Well, but remember that show I just did? And the whole crowd was laughing and you said I did it.
Yeah, that was 20 minutes ago. Did you put the almond milk away? You leave it out sometimes. Put the fucking almond milk away! Shut the fuck up and go to sleep! God. And that's my daughter talking to me, and she's smoking a cigar.
Oh my God.
I never find myself on your side, but that seems borderline abusive.
Yeah.
They are very abusive people.
Right.
I'm terribly abused at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, I have to say that I am very fortunate that we randomly all found each other and started this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been successful. But the nicest thing is that I think you guys are always the same.
Mm.
You're always going to be the same. You will never change. For better or worse, you're trapped with the personalities you've been given.
Started off as a compliment, and then it went down. But we knew that was
going to happen. I wish you'd just insult us straight away.
No growth.
Well, I know. It's like
the
preamble. No
evolution.
My hopes up, and then I'm like, oh my God, sincerity. And then it doesn't.
No, you're all joking aside. You guys are the best.
Okay.
Blah, blah.
Oh, no, it's just not.
I'm just reading what Gorley just slipped me.
Well, now there's
a
video.
Send me a piece of paper. You guys are the best. I truly love both of you, and you're the reason the podcast works.
I donate my salary to your child's college fund.
And my kids.
Well, that's what I meant.
Children's, to both of
what's
us?
What's the plural of child? Is it children's?
Why are you guys looking at me?
The possessive plural.
I don't know.
The Children's Television Workshop.
But
I wouldn't
know. And
that's
possessive as well as plural?
Well, I find you're getting very possessive right now with your knowledge of...
Oh, God. That was not good. I'm so sorry. That was terrible.
We should have gotten out minutes
that
ago.
That was so... Where this was going was so bad.
You didn't
my
let me finish.
God.
I was going to take it someplace brilliant, but now there isn't time.
Well, let's hear it.
Yeah?
No, there's
time.
No time.
No,
let's
time.
Go. We can
it's
go
not
back
TV.
To it.
We don't literally don't have a limit.
No, we got to go.
Say the possessive thing again.
Wait, getting a phone call.
Well, no, you're not. I'm looking
Hello?
At your phone.
Yeah?
There's no
there's
one
video.
On
who is it?
Proof there's no...
Oh, okay. Both Obamas. I'll come meet you now.
Both Obamas.
That's a weird thing to say to the Obamas.
Oh, it's all four Obamas, including Bo the dog. You want Cohen
Hello?
To read it?
Oh. Seven Obamas? Some Obamas we haven't heard of yet?
Wait.
Oh, yeah, I can be there in a second.
20 Obamas, possessive plural? Where does the apostrophe go?
900 Obamas. Incredible. Had no idea. Yes, I'll come to your Hawaiian compound right away.
So
I'd love to be there.
One Trump? No, not interested.
Oh, what did you do that for?
Political.
Oh,
nice.
No. We don't do that here.
Wow.
We can in that case.
I think we can.
Sure.
Yeah, it would have been good to see where the Obamas riff went.
Yeah, like, well, we'll never know now.
I was riveted.
Well, we still got more time.
This guy took it to obvious town.
7.3 million Obamas? My God.
That's it?
Oh, they're just all speaking at once. I can't make
it's very hard.
Heads or tails.
And you know, the cell signal when you get 700 people calling you at once.
Okay.
I think we had this a while ago.
This is so...
I don't know why we didn't land this plane. I'm just landing it. Landing it. I just
Please.
Ding.
Sully Sullenberger this.
No, I'm going to do better than that. I'm putting it on a tarmac. You know?
Oh, my God.
Well, I'm sorry. The guy landed it in a river.
He had no choice.
Yeah.
He saved hundreds of people.
If he had looked a little... You know what? I'm sick of this all hail Sullenberger shit.
I agree.
If he had looked a little harder, he'd have found a tarmac.
Yeah. Tarmac
Yay.
Much?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm sorry. When I went to piloting school, they didn't say, if you put it in a river, it's just as good.
Right.
And we'll call you a hero.
The precision to
Same
get it to land.
Didn't Harrison Ford land one on a golf course once?
Oh yeah, sure. Well, it's his way of playing golf.
Hasn't he crashed?
He has a golf ball strapped to the landing gear.
Oh my
and he has
God.
To put it right in the hole. All right, whatever. What have we learned? What have we learned? We have a great podcast.
Yeah.
No one's personalities have changed.
Right.
The Obamas call me regularly, and there are more of them than you think. And and I think Sullenberger gets too much credit. I'm sorry.
The state of the podcast is strong. Conan O'Brien needs a friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sonam Ovsesian, and Matt Gorley. Produced by me, Matt Gorley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy.
Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Will Becton. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?